GameStop, which is the story right now and continues to slide. Steve Alexander's been reporting the market numbers. Where is GameStop right now?
Down about 49% at 117 per share.
Is this related to the fact that the Dow is up? Are markets going up because GameStop is going down?
Well, that was described as one of the reasons that there is relief on Wall Street as this Reddit frenzy seems to have passed, as most people thought it would. But that was one of the reasons that the markets in general, the bigger markets, are going higher.
Here's another headline from CNBC. Robinhood clients can now buy up to 100 shares of GameStop stock. They further rolled back some of its trading limitations today, allowing clients to buy up to 100 shares of GameStop.
Yeah. You know, Robinhood had to scramble to get extra funding to just stay in business. The CEO, the guy named Vlad Tenev, talked about getting a call at 3:30 in the morning last week from the clearinghouse that keeps this, that allows the brokerage to stay in business, saying they needed $3 billion right away. So he called that a little nerve-wracking, but he got on the phone and was able to raise, I think, $3.4 billion overall from investors who are keeping Robinhood going.
But that's the platform, right, Robinhood?
Right.
I understand that the institutional investors, these hedge fund guys, had to have money to cover the loss.
Right.
And that's how they were trading in other stocks or trying to borrow more money to cover it. I didn't realize Robinhood would somehow have to have capital as well.
Well, sure. They have to be able to cover their bets, basically. If you look at it that way.
I guess so, but I didn't think that Robinhood was on the hook for it, but rather the people that were making the trades via Robinhood.
Well, there are regulators who control Robinhood and any other platform that's trading, you know, whether it's Charles Schwab or Fidelity or whomever.
Yeah.
And they have to adhere to certain levels of funding in order to stay in business.
Meanwhile, shares of the brick-and-mortar retailer are tanking more than 40%. I'm talking about GameStop right now. The brokerage also raised the limits on AMC Entertainment, Express, and a few other of the five restricted stocks. Cost, BlackBerry, and Genius Brands are no longer being restricted. So you can get back in the game if you all want, now that it's going back down.
It's probably not the time to, but you never know.
Count me in, said this investor. Shares of video game retailer swoon more than 50% midday, around $110 a share. The speculative trading had catapulted the stock higher last week. So as high, what was the, last thing, Steve, what was the, how high did it trade? I know I didn't ask you all of that.
You know, it was 325 a few days ago. I don't know if that was the high.
I think it was closer to 400.
400 and something,
yeah.
But just, I think, maybe Friday it was at 325.
Yeah.
Or Thursday, maybe?
And we've been below 100 today, correct?
Yeah. We're back up to 115-ish right now.
On GameStop. Ted Rossman joins us. Ted is an industry analyst at creditcards.com. Ted, thanks for taking our call. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
If I get a stimulus check and have extra cash in my pocket, but also have credit cards with balances, should I apply that directly to the amount I owe? Would that be your recommendation?
It's a great idea. The only hesitation is if you don't have a lot of savings and you're worried about making ends meet in the next few months. In that case, I would say keep the cash on hand. But for many people, it does make sense to pour that stimulus check into debt payoff. In fact, that's been one of the most common uses. We've seen total credit card debt fall 13% over the past year. It's emblematic of this K-shaped recovery, because for all the people that are doing pretty well and paying off debt, sadly, there's another half that's adding to their credit card debt during this pandemic.
That's interesting. So the top of the K has now got less credit debt than before March, and the bottom of the K is carrying more?
That's right. So in terms of people, it's basically half and half. In terms of dollars, though, it's actually been a big improvement. Total credit card debt now is 13% lower than it was a year ago.
Of course, that's in part, well, you answer this question. Is that because the federal government helped pay off that debt, or people were living more carefully? What happened there?
Stimulus is a big part of it. The Fed found that about a third of stimulus checks went to debt payoff and about a third went to savings. That's a big part. The other thing, though, is people have been spending less. And this gets back to the K-shaped recovery idea, too, because for the people that are doing relatively well, maybe they're still working, maybe they have savings, you know, they've gone on fewer vacations, they've been dining out less, they've really been saving in a lot of areas. And we've really seen that play out in the credit card space because, you know, traditionally people use credit mostly for discretionary stuff and they use their debit cards for groceries and other day-to-day necessities. So people spending less is another big part of debt declining.
What's the average credit card rate these days?
16%. So that's so much higher than you get on other forms of debt. 3 to 5 times higher than your mortgage, your car loan, your student loan. That's why paying it off is so important if you can.
But you should use your credit card for everything, even groceries and gas, if you can pay off the balance, right?
Absolutely. That's the big fork in the road. If you can pay those bills in full and avoid interest, then I'm a huge fan of using credit for everything because you get rewards and you get better buyer protections too.
Yeah.
So whether you get a flat rate, let's say 2% cash back, or maybe you lean into certain categories, you can do better than that. You can get a free trip that you can look forward to when this is all over. Credit is great as long as you can avoid those interest rates.
Are there, has the reward scheme changed? For instance, maybe miles aren't as important to people now as they used to be. I wonder what credit card companies are doing to incentivize you.
It has become a lot more cashback centric over the past year. Even travel cards have offered additional incentives for redeeming your points and miles for cash or cash equivalents, basically a statement credit where you can cancel out purchases, often at a higher rate that used to be reserved just for travel. I'm thinking of cards like the Chase Sapphire Reserve, Capital One Venture. A lot of airline cards have acknowledged that people are not traveling much, so they'll give you bonus points for spending at the grocery store or on takeout and delivery. And I actually think a lot of this will stick around even after the pandemic because cash is very universal. There's a big appeal to that. And people like getting rewards for everyday expenses. So whether it's your commute, whether it's food, I think we'll see more of this.
Are companies a little more flexible now? You know, the legend is, and I think there's some truth to it, that if you call the number on the back of your credit card and say, I want a lower rate, that often works. Is that happening right now?
It does work, yeah. And we found in a recent study that 85% of people who asked for a late fee to be waived in 2020 got it. So that can save you about $40 a pop. I mean, don't make a habit out of it, but once in a while, that works. Annual fee waivers connected to what we were just saying about travel cards not being as useful. A similar number, about 80% of people who asked for an annual fee to be waived or lowered got some relief there. Lower interest rates, that could be had about 3/4 of the time. And even a higher credit limit is something that people get about 70% of the time. Bottom line, it doesn't hurt to ask. There's a good chance that you can get some help.
What do you make of the strategy of transferring the balance from one card to another, and then you take advantage of some sort of zero fee or some, you know, offer?
It's a great idea, but that has gotten harder to qualify for over the past year. Lenders are very worried about risk and jobs and the economy, and the bar has been raised. I would say right now to get a 0% balance transfer card, you probably need a credit score of 720 or above. That's a rough guideline, but they definitely are looking for a higher number now. A year ago, I would have pegged it more like 670.
This sounds naive, but answer this for me still. The companies do want you to carry a balance, right? That's how they make their money, correct?
It's how they make money, but I think especially during a recession like this, when they get nervous, there's certainly value to be had in the so-called transactors as well, because even if you pay your bill in full and avoid interest, they still get a cut of every transaction. Usually it's about 2 or 2.5% of everything that you buy. They get that from the merchant. So there's definitely some value there. Annual fees too. A company like American Express really views that as kind of a steady annuity-like revenue stream. So yeah, the big bucks for them are in people who carry a balance, but they worry that people might not pay them back. So that's why, especially when the economy is taking a downturn, that's why they prioritize some of these other kind of steady eddy revenue streams.
But repeat that point you made at the beginning of this, the K-shaped recovery. Some people are actually carrying less debt now. Others have picked up more credit debt, correct?
Yes, and that's what's so interesting here. And it really runs counter to a lot of recessions. But it makes sense because this one has really not been equal. I mean, some people, their home value's up, their stock portfolio's up, they're still working, they're spending less. This is contributing to that overall stat that credit card debt has fallen 13%. But then on the other hand, we have 51% of people with credit card debt who have added to it over the past year. So I think that kind of gets concealed in the big picture stat of credit card debt being down substantially.
Yeah, I think the former is more important. That is, all right, so you said that overall credit card debt is down, but 51% of us have higher credit bills, meaning they're carrying the load for a lot more people as well. That is the amount of debt that they're carrying, the amount of balance they have on their credit card is not only gone up for them, but all these other people who've seen it gone down. It's, in other words, your balance must have gone up considerably, is another way to look at that.
The average right now is about $5,500, and that can really take a big chunk out of your household budget, especially at 16%. So that's where, if you can, make it a priority. Rearrange your budget so that you can dedicate more to debt payoff, or if you can, use some of that stimulus check. It really is a guaranteed return of 16% is the average. It's hard to beat that, and it is much more of a priority than other kinds of debt.
What's 16% of $5,500? That's about $750, right? Something like that. So if that's what you're paying, would that be your amount due every month?
So the typical minimum payment is only 1% of the balance plus interest. So that's where they can really get you. That average debt, if you stretch it out with minimum payments, you're going to be in debt for about 20 years, and you're going to pay about as much in interest as you did in principal in the first place. So that's where it's highly variable depending on how much you're paying. But the advice there would be pay it all if you can, or at least pay way more than the minimum, because 1% of the balance plus interest, that's not making much of a dent.
I mean, a credit card has value, and if you're stuck, then it's a good thing. But the math on this sounds a little sinister at the same time.
And that's why there's been a bit of a backlash, especially over the past year. Debit card spending is up about 15% over the past year. Credit card spending in total is down about 5%. We also saw the rise of buy now, pay later. It's been going on for years, but it was especially pronounced this holiday season. Mm-hmm. Companies like Affirm and Afterpay allowing you to pay in installments, sometimes for a low or no interest rate. I think people have gotten more debt conscious, and I think that's especially true of young adults. They may have a lot of student loans. They're wary of piling on open-ended credit card debt. From a consumer standpoint, I think that's a smart thing. But as I said, credit cards can work for you as well if you get to that point when you can pay them in full. So I wouldn't stay away entirely. It's also important to build a credit score, but you don't want credit card debt.
Well, that's a great backstop if it's even temporary, even if you do have to carry a balance a little bit. Sometimes it's the only port in a storm. Are they as liberal with issuing credit cards to students these days? You just mentioned them.
We have definitely seen a more conservative lending environment over the past year. I think it's starting to open up a little bit, but even there, it's opening up first for the most credit worthy. Banks are still nervous. The feeling is that the worst may have been avoided because delinquencies and defaults have actually fallen over the past year for some of the aforementioned reasons about stimulus and people spending less. So we're not out of the woods yet. I still think that it's harder to get a new card now than it was a year ago. But I do expect once we see wider vaccine availability and more people going back to work, I think it'll loosen up, but it's going to take some time. And at first, it's going to be the most credit worthy.
If I switch cards and transfer the balance, Does my credit rating suffer as a result? Is that good or bad for my credit rating?
So the key impact there is your credit utilization ratio. So basically, credit you're using divided by your total credit limit. In that sense, you're going to owe the same amount, but by opening the new card, you have more available credit. So that's where often the advice is to leave old cards open in the background, hopefully with no balance or a low balance, and then all that available credit helps you. So it should have an effect, a positive effect, and even more so over time as you pay it down. But you want to keep an eye on that, how much you're using divided by how much is available to you, and you know, keep the balances low, but keep a lot of available credit. It's usually better not to cancel old cards.
Want to know more about cards and rates? Creditcards.com. Creditcards.com. Industry analyst there, Ted Rossman. Ted, nice to talk to you. Thanks for the help today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. I'm John Williams. Mark Sotolino joins us. He's a partner at Cafe Baba Reba. CafeBabaReba.com. It's the popular tapas-style restaurant over in Lincoln Park. 35 years they've been up and running, and here we go with number 35. Hey, Mark, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great, John. Thanks for having us.
I understand you guys have a special going on now through the 11th to celebrate the 35th anniversary. Bet you're really glad you can do some dine-in as well, huh?
Absolutely. That's the most exciting part, and it's great timing now that we're able to do indoor dining. But yeah, we just turned 35 this past year, and we're very grateful to all of our loyal guests for having supported us over the past year.
So I said it's Spanish tapas style. Is that maybe the most succinct description of what Baba Reba does?
That's exactly right. When we opened 35 years ago, we were actually the first Spanish tapas restaurant. My dad was the original executive chef, and he is from Spain, as my family is. So proud to represent Spanish culture in Lincoln Park and in Chicago in general.
But some people do small plates these days, and it's not necessarily Spanish-style food, right?
That's very true. Yeah, I think, like I said, when we first started 35 years ago, tapas and small plates and all that was unheard of. Everyone was kind of looking for their appetizer, salad, entree, soup. Now, small plates are everywhere. I feel like every type of cuisine has their own version of small plates, whether it be Greek mezza or whether it just be your American fare. Mm-hmm. But I like to think the tapas was the original.
Do you want to go to those people and say, hey, it was my idea. We started this trend, and now small plates are everywhere. You guys were there at the beginning. Was it a hit when you started? Did people go, oh, perfect, or did you have to sort of educate them?
A little bit of both. We were a hit right from the beginning, but I think we were a hit partially because we're part of Let's Entertain You, which obviously has a great following in Chicago. But in the very beginning, I can tell you, most people were a little confused as what it was. There was a lot of jokes that, you know, we have a big sign that says Tapas Bar in front, and we advertise ourselves as a tapas bar. And a lot of people said, "Are you a topless bar?" So that joke I've heard many, many times, but I hear it less and less these days as people become more comfortable with it.
Where's the dancing ladies? So then 35 years later, you're doing a menu now that sort of looks back on what your hits have been, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We've grown and developed things over the year, but we do still have a lot of items that were as popular back in 1985 as they are now. So we're doing a lot of things, actually, to celebrate our 35th anniversary. One of them is our 35th anniversary menu, which is kind of a selection of our classic items and a couple of new things that people have enjoyed over the years, and that's available for pickup and for delivery. And obviously, you can come in, as you noted, said earlier, you can now come in the restaurant and join us indoor dining as well.
What's been the most popular item? What is the home run for you guys?
You know, over the years, there's probably three items that if we were to take them off the menu, there would be a small ride in Lincoln Park. Most notably, the one that in the Spanish name for it is Patatas Bravas, but everyone kind of knows it as our spicy potatoes. We sell about literally 100 to 200 of those a day. The other very popular item are bacon-wrapped dates. that comes with an apple cider vinaigrette, and those items, like I said, if we took them off the menu, people would have a small riot.
You said three. Bacon wrap. I'm making a note here.
No, you're right. And then the other one, I'll get you your full meal. Don't worry, John. The last one would be the baked goat cheese. It's just our blend of Spanish goat cheese that is baked in tomato sauce, and then we serve it with our bread that we bake in-house daily with some garlic parsley oil on top, and we do it in our wood-burning oven. And it's a big hit. It's a good sharing item.
Pete, these interviews in the lunch hour just kill me. They just kill me. I mean, who's not hungry for this stuff now? How have you all managed since March?
It obviously has been challenging. We've all had a challenging year, but the restaurant industry has had its own unique challenges. We have obviously had a great amount of carryout and delivery business, especially in the colder months when we were open for, we were obviously open for indoor and patio dining for portions of that, but we've been lucky to have a strong base of guests that have been, ordered us for carryout, for delivery. We have done as much adjusting as possible to make it work. And the main thing is we're very intent on making it the safest environment for our guests and for our staff. So we follow all the CDC safety protocols. We also have an air filtration system that provides air and surface sanitizing in the restaurants. All of our less entertaining restaurants have those.
Dude, would you say there's a number, like, were you flat, were you up, were you down? I know some pizza joints actually did just fine. What about a place like yours? How much were you off since March?
I wish I could say, like some of those restaurants you mentioned, that we were the same. Our carryout business was certainly more than last year, but overall, you know, we have a pretty big restaurant, and we had you know, 200 to 300 seats, and when you eliminate all of those, there's not enough carryout delivery to go around. So overall, we were down about 40% from last year if you compare the 2 years. Things are looking up. The last month or two have been fantastic. The holidays were great. And we're hoping the 35th anniversary gives people another reason to come see us.
Yeah, and then you got some 25% interior dining, and you do have a heated patio, right?
Yeah, we have a heated patio, which has been great. We have a retractable roof that we've been able to open up to allow fresh air in. And as long as there's not too much of the elements, that works great. And then we have heaters. We added extra heaters, whether it be radiant heaters or industrial blowers. Whatever we can do to keep the people warm, despite our wintry mix that we're dealing with right now.
It must do your heart good. Mark Solotino's on a phone line. Cafe Barbariba in Lincoln Park, 35 years in business, anniversary celebration going through February 11th. It must make you feel good, though, to be in a business where I've seen so many people in some of these tents or indoor-outdoor seating areas where they're sitting there with a coat and mittens on, and they're having a margarita, or they're having some sangria, and they're sitting outside. The other day it was snowing, and people are like, no, I am eating out at one of these great restaurants. That, while business has been off, you know there's people that love you, miss you, want you. This is a restaurant town. People eating outside in the snow is proof it's a restaurant town.
100%, and we're very grateful that people have that hunger and that thirst to have dining experiences despite the weather, despite the challenges, you know, whether it's in the comfort of their own home or, like you said, if it's with a coat on and a glass of sangria to keep them warm.
Yeah, no kidding. Here's to you, outdoor eaters. By the way, last question, Cafe Barbariba, how did the name come about?
I get that all the time. It doesn't actually mean anything. There is an old Spanish folk song that has a refrain, kind of like in the same imitation as the Macarena. There's a refrain for this folk song that's like, "Hey, Barbariba," and Rich Melman from Let Us Entertain You and my dad, Gabino Sodolino, they just kind of like the way the name sounded. It's always been a very fun, celebratory place. And people, you know, people kind of go there to have a good time and to celebrate. So it kind of has that feeling right in the name.
I guess the same restaurant chain that would name someplace R.J. Grunt's or Once Upon a Time Jonathan Livingston Seafood would also have a place called Cafe Barbariba, because that sounds fun to say. If the food's good, that's what matters, right?
Absolutely. That people will, might come for the fun name, but they will come back for the food for sure.
Yeah, congratulations, Mark. Another good 35 years to you, and maybe more importantly right now, a good 30 days or so. Let's get out of this funk and get people back in the restaurants, right?
100%, yeah. And we encourage everyone, please go to our website, cafebabaru.com. Please follow us on Instagram and social media. We're doing a 35th anniversary sweepstakes, so we're giving you all kinds of incentives, prizes, gift cards, dining experiences to come and join us. And we're also doing pop-ups to try to, if you can't come to us, we'll come to you. We did a pop-up in Oak Brook last week, and we're doing one in River North in the end of next week as well. So we're looking forward to seeing everybody out there. We appreciate the support.
Mark Sotolino's a partner there. Thanks, Mark. Good luck to you.
Thanks very much, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. In the newsroom now, here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Software consultancy ThoughtWorks has acquired Forkind, a startup based in Finland that focuses on machine learning and data science. The price is undisclosed, according to Chicago Inno. A team of 40 data scientists and engineers will join the ThoughtWorks team, but will continue to operate from offices in Helsinki. Chicago-based ThoughtWorks provide software design and tech consulting services to clients like Delta, Porsche, and Sonic. McDonald's has started to sell the McPlant burger in Denmark and Sweden. The rollout will help the company gauge customer interest in the alternative meat offering. McPlant was developed with Beyond Meat and is made from pea-based protein. Cook County's waiving late fees on property taxes for 2 months. Taxpayers now have until May 3rd to pay the first installment without a penalty. Property tax bills should start arriving at home soon. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is our next stop, WGN Radio News. First, let's visit with Amy Guth for a little bit, talk about a couple of stories that are in the news. Four different kinds of things in front of me. Amy, where should we start today?
I think let's start with Uber and their big announcement with the Drizzly app.
How about that? Yeah, so the people that are driving you around are now going to drive the booze around, huh?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So Drizzly, I don't know if you know about this app, but it is an alcohol on demand app, essentially. It's like an alcohol delivery app. And they have done a deal with Uber that is worth $1.1 billion with a B in stock and cash. So we're talking pretty big business here. Drizzly is going to keep its own app. So if you are a Drizzly app user, you can still use it that way. But if you use the Uber Eats app, it is going to be integrated into that app as well. So for Drizzly, they've got two different paths to them now. And, you know, this is going to be a way that you can get alcohol on demand, alcohol delivered right to your door. The Uber, the statement from Uber was kind of like, you know, now there's just even more stuff that you can get from Uber. There's more things that you can have delivered. So that, of course, the markets reacted to that. Uber stock was up about 5% in pre-market trading on that news. And the deal is supposed to close in the first half of 2021. So sometime in the next couple months or so. It does create some logistics stuff. So there's a lot of to sign up and get involved with the app. Of course, you have to, you know, prove that you're over 21 and you have to be there to accept the stuff, things like that. But, you know, here's another piece of that delivery market space that Uber has in that really competitive space with Postmates and Uber Eats and Grubhub and you know, DoorDash and all that stuff. Here's a step forward.
Well, I understand the concept, but wow, $1.1 billion for a company that does kind of what everybody's already doing anyway, delivering things and stuff. But that app, I guess its market, its 1,400 city database, $1 billion. Wow. And speaking of deliveries, what was it? UPS had a pretty good report too, right?
Yeah, so UPS, there's a couple of different earnings reports I'm watching today, but I thought UPS was really interesting, talking about their fourth quarter. Their stock was also up about 5% this morning in earlier trading because they posted record revenue during the last 3 months of 2020. That's, of course, the quarter ending December 31st. And a lot of that is holiday shopping, but a lot of that is also just kind of the shift to online shopping as the normal thing. UPS really says that they expect it to stay that way. They're citing, you know, hey, even some, you know, elderly relatives who would not have shopped online before now are quite good at it. So we expect to some degree that this is going to keep up. And so they're very hopeful with their forecasting. But when we're talking about numbers, their revenue rose 21% to just under $25 billion in those 3 months. So again, it's a very large number. But you know, it's no surprise, right? When we're thinking about how many people are shopping online, all of that stuff. And that number is on top of a little bit of a loss because they had additional fuel, you know, fuel expenses. They had some pension obligations that they had to do. And they also sold part of the freight business. So that's on top of that. So but the year before, it had reported a lot smaller loss of about $106 million. But nonetheless, they were able to come out with a record even with a loss on their books.
Impossible Foods. Let's just stay in the food sector or go back to it anyway. What's going on there?
Yeah. So Impossible, they've decided they're going to try to, they're looking for price parity is the term they're throwing around with beef. They're trying to make it a little bit easier to say yes to plant-based protein by making it a little bit less expensive and try to bring the price down to be a little more in line with what you would pay for beef. And they're going to cut that price about 20% of the retail price in stores. So we're going to start seeing that pretty quickly. They're going to start doing that right away. So, you know, right now, the recommended retail price for the burgers is about $5.49 for the patties. And, you know, we're going to start seeing that come down by 20%. So we'll start, you know, you'll be able to see those in the store pretty quickly. But I also anticipate this will create a little more competition. Here's another space where we're going to see some competition with, you know, Beyond Meat and all those. Of course, Beyond Meat is in the news right now because McDonald's had started testing that McPlant burger. They've started very quietly testing it in Sweden and Denmark. And Beyond Meat is answering the call for that and taking care of that protein for that. They have not committed to Beyond Meat being the overall supplier when they roll out to other markets. But for now, they are doing that test with them through at least the first quarter of this year. So, you know, there's kind of a lot of stuff brewing in that plant-based space. The McDonald's CEO said that, you know, he felt like the plant-based options, they're looking beyond burgers into, you know, a chicken-like product and even kind of breakfast meat, mm-hmm, things like that. Mm-hmm. So I think there'll be a lot to watch in that plant-based meat space. I think it seemed like kind of a bit of an initial trend when we saw it with Burger King and the Impossible Whopper. But now as we're seeing it in, you know, many different brands to pick from in grocery stores, and we're starting to see prices come down for it, I think that's a little bit more meaningful space, a meaningful hold in the market. So we'll start to see other competitors.
That's Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We'll catch up on the airline industry next time. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.